Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. Well, a year ago today, the Vegas Golden Knights didn't have any players. Now they're 7 wins away from the Stanley Cup, including last night's win at Winnipeg.
Lowry manages to keep the zone, but now he lost the puck. Smith got it ahead. Carlson, a return to Smith, left circle, centers Marchessault, he scores! On the backhand, 3-1 Vegas. Marchessault's second goal of the game. Carlson to Smith to Marchessault. Careful management of the puck. Smith on the left drew the attention. Marchessault right toward the top of the crease, moved to his left, and got through Hellebuck on the backhand. Second backhand goal by Marchessault today, and the Knights lead it 3-1.
And they won the game 3-1, courtesy of KRLV. They go back now to Las Vegas with the series tied at a game apiece. Well, during the course of any individual's career, there are certain people along the way that you run into that make you better just by being around them. For me, one of them was the privilege of being around Stan Saverin for many years. Stan, welcome. It is great to have you with us back on the show.
Steve, I'm not so sure if you're talking about me or you, because it works both ways. Thank you. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, great to talk with you. Since I had hockey on there moments ago, I want to talk about that for a moment. The Penguins win back-to-back Stanley Cups, and they actually win 9 consecutive series. In the end, for them in this particular season, what wasn't quite there for them as the season played along and in the playoffs?
I think there are a number of areas, Steve. First of all, let me just say they met a Capitals team that showed more resolve than they ever had in the past. I mean, the mere sight of the Penguins used to sort of make them weak-kneed and jelly-legged. I sense the Capitals, as witnessed by winning 2 games in Tampa now, are a more resilient, mentally tougher group. Maybe the pressure on them wasn't as great. They weren't going in as favorites. Matt Murray was not nearly as good as the goaltending had been with both he and Fleury the last 2 years. I think the bottom six production really not only was it not as good, it was non-existent. In the Capitals series, really throughout the Flyers series as well, you know, they'd get great contributions from guys like, you know, Bonino and guys like Matt Cullen. They got some of it during the regular season, but not nearly what they got in past playoff runs. And I think that they were fatigued. And I know that sounds like an excuse, but I think it's a legitimate reason. There's a legitimate reason why no one has won 3 Stanley Cups in succession in 35 years. There was a reason that no team had won back-to-back cups in the salary cap era. And I do think that there is a matter of attrition that comes into play. And I really didn't think it was going to a factor until Game 6 when they got eliminated against the Capitals. For the first time, Steve, I noticed that they were a half step slow to the puck. And that was Mike Sullivan's game. It wasn't a matter of straight out speed or that Phil Kessel or Carroll Hagelin could outskate someone from, you know, blue line to blue line. It was just they were a half step quicker to the puck. And that's what gave them, I think, a tremendous advantage. They did not have that. And so I think all those factors came in, and they valiant effort. I mean, if Kuhnhackl's shot in overtime goes in instead of out, which, you know, the last 2 playoff runs, they got an awful lot of breaks. They didn't get many this time, and that's part of playoff hockey.
In fact, it's interesting you say that, because after they had lost that game, I started the show the next day and said, you know what, I felt like the Penguins played really, really well. I mean, I thought they played really, really hard, yet I felt they still got outplayed 75% of the time.
They did. And I think really, if you go back to even last year's playoffs or 2 years ago, you know, there were extended expanses when against, I remember, the Tampa Bay series when they got outplayed badly and still somehow managed to win it in 7. If you'll remember the Stanley Cup Finals, they won the first 2 games on home ice, but Nashville outplayed them significantly. I mean, at one time they went 21 or 23 minutes without a shot and still managed to win that game. They had tremendous resolve, but I do think that I don't know that Washington is a better team, but I think that they were the better team in that particular series. I think Holtby clearly was a better goaltender than Matt Murray was.
I have to ask you about the Vegas deal, because a year ago today they had no players. When you see something like this, where they're coming in against established teams, I know the expansion draft was very friendly to them, but being very friendly in the expansion draft should mean that you finish eighth going in. What do you think?
Well, I do think that this was, the most favorable method that the NHL has ever used, and I understand why. I think there are a couple factors, and not many people talk about this. The last expansion, I remember distinctly, Steve, that San Jose and Ottawa were just awful. It was a joke when they first came into the league. In fact, I was doing color on Penguins games back then, and they were getting ready to play Ottawa. And I looked it up. Over a three-year period of time, the Ottawa Senators had the worst winning percentage of any sports expansion franchise, all sports, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, taking the first 3 years after their expansion years, and they came into their respective leagues, the Ottawa Senators had the worst winning percentage. They were just awful, and I understand why they didn't want to do that again. It's not competitive. Frankly, it's not fair to the ownership that's paying whatever it is, $800 million, and you get this team that can't compete. I also think that they really got a very good general manager in George McPhee. His work with the Capitals is renowned, and I always felt that Gerard Gallant was a tremendous coach, and I remember saying when Florida fired him, What are you doing? And the thing about him is that he learned a lot of what he knows about defensive hockey from none other than Scotty Bowman, who fairly accomplished guy with the Detroit Red Wings. And it seems to me when you have a team with they have decent talent, but it's somewhat limited. You have to play a strong defensive hockey game because you're not going to get a lot of offensive talent. And oh, by the way, not many expansion teams start out with a three-time Stanley Cup goaltender, in net, which kind of helps out your defensive posture as well.
Okay, 40 games in. What's your general impression of the Pirates so far?
I'm surprised, pleasantly. I thought, Steve, that they'd be a little bit better than the doomsayers who said, oh, they'll lose 90. I never thought that for a minute. But I have to admit that here they are, through the quarter pole and, sitting there six games over 500. I did not anticipate that. I don't know whether it's sustainable. I think that the division they're in will probably come to bear. You have to play 18, 19 games against those guys. I mean, the Reds, they've won six in a row. They're still going to be a bad team, but the Brewers are much better. We all know about the Cubs, and the Cardinals are the Cardinals. So I think that ultimately, when they get into division play, although they've done pretty well in division games thus far, that's going to sort of tamp down the record. But if they're anywhere near 500, I know people don't want to hear that, but it's going to take them a while to build back up to at least where they hope they can get again. And I think this is a great start. I honestly think, we just had the emotional weekend with Andrew McCutchen here. It was great. I think all parties enjoyed it. It brought back some great memories. But the thing that impressed me is the Pirates were able to, compartmentalize that, and they won two out of three. They've won five of their last six series. That's how you build a plus 500 record. It's not by winning eight in a row and then losing seven in a row. It's by taking series, and they've won five of the last six. As far as its sustainability, I think offensively it is. I think Corey Dickerson is a proven major league hitter. Yep. And the truth of the matter is, over the last 3 years, his numbers are better than Andrew McCutchen's. Mm-hmm. Where I wonder about their ability to sustain this is the starting pitching. It's been in and out, up and down. Jameson Taillon has been inconsistent, the same for Nova. They've gotten some surprises with Trevor Williams, but they're still really searching for that fifth starter. So that, to me, is the key. The starting pitching's got to be better, at least more consistent than it's been.
you and I, of course, both really, really enjoy baseball a lot. When you look at the game now that is so heavily weighed on home runs, strikeouts, and walks, do you like what you're seeing, or would you like to see some changes?
I don't know what changes you would make. You know, these things tend to be cyclical. Listen, the big money's always gone to home run guys. But I don't like to see balls not being put into play. I'm not suggesting that we turn Aaron Judge into a singles hitter, but I also think that we don't necessarily have to turn singles hitters into 230 hitters who hit 25 home runs, but, you know, strike out, you know, twice as much as they hit home runs, or three times as much. I mean, the astounding stat to me was that there were, I believe it was the month of April, there were more strikeouts than hits. I mean, you know, I realize that everybody's got their role to play on a baseball team, but I mean, it's just excessive, and I don't think it's terribly entertaining. We all like to see the strikeout pitchers, you know, the big strikeout guys, the Nolan Ryans and Corey Klubers and guys like that. But not everybody should be striking out a batter per inning. I don't think it's good for the game. I don't think it's going to destroy it by any stretch. But if we're just talking about you and I being fans of the game, I like to see balls put in play. I just think it's too much, and I don't think it's a true representation of the game. I think that the metrics are a factor. I think that the shifts are a factor. But then again, I also wonder, if you're not a home run hitter and they put four guys on the right side of the diamond, then why in the world, as a left-handed hitter, wouldn't you just poke a single into left? I mean, would you rather try to beat the shift and be macho, or would you rather, you know, get a base hit and get on base and help your team? I realize maybe that's easier said than done, but I think when you see half of a diamond open, I'm going to take that if I have the opportunity, and very few of these guys will.
Yeah, absolutely right. So I was at a game at Fenway one time. The Red Sox were playing the Royals, and David Ortiz was up, and of course they shifted. He bunted. Right? And of course, and everybody, of course, loved it because, you know, he bunted, and yeah, even against the shift, he still beat it out. Okay.
So. The problem is that the people who loved it the most were the Royals,
yes,
because they're more than happy to get him on first base rather than have him trotting around. I mean, I get that part, but now they're not just shifting, you know, on the Ted Williamses and David Ortiz of the world. You know, they're shifting on the 220 hitters too, because the metrics allow them to do that. I think everything in sports is cyclical, Steve, and I think that it'll come back around the other way. Once, you know, guys start, you know, lining balls into left center or through the shortstop hole, you know, those metrics will change once again. You know, to draw an analogy, I think the same thing is in progress in the NFL. I remember talking about this a couple of years ago, the year where no running backs were taken in the first round of the NFL draft. Right. Part of that was because Trent Richardson was such a bust coming out of Alabama when Cleveland drafted him. But I also think, you know, it's a passing league. It still is. But I think the guy who changed all that was Le'Veon Bell, because all of a sudden you could see a different value quotient in your running back. And now what do we see? Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette, of course Saquon, who's, you know, unique in that regard, but we're seeing a lot more running backs because defense in the NFL, it's all sub-package football, it's nickel and dime. Well, guess what? It takes a big guy off the field, and it takes at least one middle linebacker off the field. You're ripe to get run on. So I think you're going to see, my point is, the cycle will come around the other way.
Absolutely right. I just want to ask you, what did you think of the Steelers draft when it was all said and done?
I always look at drafts as to, I have no idea if they filled their needs. The only thing I can ask is, did they address them? They appeared to address some of them, but I have to tell you, I'm torn between what everyone knew the obvious needs were, but also not having the availability to view their board. I mean, I have to take them at their word. They clearly did not think that there was an inside linebacker worthy of the 28th pick, so they took the hybrid in Terrell Edmunds, and there wasn't anybody of value in the third round. The second round pick is understandable because they traded Martavis Bryant, and they wanted to get a wide receiver in here, and frankly, they wanted to get rid of Martavis Bryant before he got rid of them, if you know what I mean. So James Washington, you know, he'll be Juju, and Juju will be Martavis, and that's all well and good. they still need help defensively. I mean, you cannot tell me with any degree of certainty that this defense is better now than it was 6 months ago when they lost to Jacksonville. But that having been said, there, you know, I also think that when we think of safeties, we think of the traditional safety, Marcus Allen being one that they plan to use in that role. But safeties are changing. Again, sub-package football. They signed Morgan Burnett from Green Bay, who is sort of a hybrid kind of guy who can play inside. You know, there aren't many Troy Polamalu's out there. There aren't many Ed Reed's out there. So their answer to not drafting an inside linebacker is that these guys, to a degree, will fill that role substantially.
Stan, always an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time, my friend. It's always great talking with you.
Steve, thank you so much for asking. I'm always available whenever you want me or need me. I'm there, and I really appreciate your kind words. Ditto, coming right back at you, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks so much, Stan. Legitimately, I mean the great Stan Saverin. And I can't begin to tell you, when you're in this business, you know, you're at a young age. All right, so here I am sitting at, I started on the Penn State Basketball Network. I filled in when I was 23, okay? And I got then the full-time spot when I was 24. And then I was put on the Football Network as the third guy at 25. Now, you're young at this point. And you sit down, and what Nelson Goldberg did, who TCS had the rights, he decided to do a round table for a pregame show with Joe. And Joe would sit down for 45, 50 minutes with us, and we'd do this round table. And so I'm sitting there as the, quote, junior partner of all this. And these are the people I have in the room with me. Of course, obviously Joe, right? But I've got Gil Santos, just passed away. And you heard me talk wax poetic about Gil 3-4 weeks ago when he passed. John Grant, George Paterno, Stan Saverin. Now, I'm sitting there at this age. I'm looking around. I'm seeing these great professionals around me. And look, I kept a low profile, you know, unless spoken to, because I, out of great respect, and all of them, and Stan is certainly among them, treated me so well. I mean, I'm talking, it was, it just treated me so well. I mean, they treated me like, look, this is going to sound ridiculous, but like equals. Well, I'm, at that stage of my career, I'm not equal to what they're doing. I haven't done what they've done at that point. Yet they didn't treat me that way. And Stan was a person I sat there, listened to, learned from, great interviewer, knew how to ask a question. You know, and I listened to a guy like that and talking with him. Well, obviously you can tell the great respect I have for him. I think Stan's pretty special. All right. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, we're not done for the day yet. We still have Matt Snyder, the Major League Baseball writer from CBSSports.com, to join us. Also coming up on Thursday, Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ActionNetwork.com. Dick Girardi joins us on the show. Also, Steve Bortstein is going to join us from Fox Sports on the Preakness Thursday, and Dick Girardi on the Preakness Friday. So that's what we have coming up the rest of the week. Now, the Phillies are playing tomorrow. And they will be in this time slot. So I know that a lot of you have to overcome massive depression when it comes to that. I understand that. We do have operators standing by, and you can also go online at digitalmedia.com.
Oh, that's the place. I was thinking stevejonesshow.com and catch a podcast. You know, check in with an episode you may have missed.
Well, I mean, if you want to overcome depression and feel like, you know, your life is really in much better shape than you realize, go to suit.com. Then you'll say, my life really is better than that guy, so I feel better. In fact, we have a number. I just received a number of emails now that just the mere thought of it made them feel better.
That didn't take long.
Glad I'm not that guy.
Help me help you.
I'm glad I'm not that guy. It really gave me a fresh perspective on life. Or to quote the digital media master himself, that's not funny. Oh, goodness gracious. All right, we've had a lot of fun today and a lot of great guests. It's been some show so far.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Pleasure to have you with us today. Our thanks to Stan Savern, who joined us in the previous half hour. And then we were able to talk about the sports gambling legislation that is forthcoming in legislatures across the country. Some have already been passed, including Pennsylvania, in the 3:30 half hour. Check this out on the Steve Jones Show podcast. Now let's talk about Major League Baseball with Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com. Matt, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, good to be here.
Okay, Matt, how would you assess the opening 40 games? I mean, we're essentially at the quarter pole right now. So at the quarter pole, what strikes you?
I think Shohei Ohtani is probably the best story, and I love it. It's outstanding the way he's acclimated himself to Major League Baseball. Yankees and Red Sox are both awesome and maybe even better than everybody thought they would be, and everybody thought they'd be great. And, of course, the Dodgers. Yuck. Just terrible. And that is kind of – I mean, they've had injuries, but even despite the injuries, they've been bad. So they're in a bad, bad way, and – given that Corey Seager's out for the season, given that Clayton Kershaw's hurt right now, given that Kenley Jansen is getting better but still doesn't seem all the way back to what he was the last few years, given that Justin Turner is coming off a broken wrist, and a lot of times that ruins seasons, I don't have confidence that they're actually going to bounce back. I think they might be cooked.
Very well could be. Speaking of cooked, $11 million essentially is going to be an 80-game suspension for Robinson Cano for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy in Major League Baseball. What were your thoughts when you saw that one come down the line?
I was just sad. I hate it because, in a way, for some reason, there's a double standard in the general public eye when it comes to baseball versus, let's say, football and PEDs. People don't freak out as much when a football player gets nagged, gets nailed for four games. But in baseball, everybody goes with confirmation bias and just says, hey, see, they're all cheaters. And I hate it. So I'm just sad. The Hall of Fame caliber player, but when I do get a Hall of Fame vote, my rule is going to be, if you were suspended for PEDs when you played, I'm not going to vote for you. But if you never were, then I'm not going to try to guess. So, like, I would be yes on Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. But unfortunately, with Cano using my rule, which I feel like is the only way to be consistent and fair, I would be a no on Cano now. So, like I said, I'm just kind of sad about it.
A lot of pressure when you sign the kind of contract that he signed. And I'm not making an excuse here all. But what kind of pressure are they under to perform, considering the numbers that they're getting and the length of a 10-year contract like he got?
You know, it's not the NFL where you can just cut guys. I kind of feel like once you sign it, the pressure should kind of be off. I know people want to live up to it, and I know John Lester, for example, talked about his first year with the Cubs, how he thought he had a bad year because he signed that huge deal, and it was his first year, and there was a lot of pressure, and he put too much pressure on himself. But you kind of feel like by now on Cano's deal that there should be basically like no pressure at all anymore. You've got that much money in the bank. You've got that much more money coming. They can't take it away from you. So I feel like it should be off, but, you know, maybe guys do put extra pressure on themselves to try to live up to it. And, you know, we know that the Mariners have the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball. So maybe there's a little extra there.
All right. I want to go back to you being a Hall of Fame voter. You mentioned that if they've tested positive, that will be a litmus test for you. Fair enough word,
yeah.
I hope. Where does that put David Ortiz for you?
I'm going to be a yes on Ortiz, and it's because it was a report about the 2003 test, which was supposed to be anonymous. We don't have the rest of that list. We don't know exactly what transpired. We don't know if he was definitely doing it for sure. I'm not comfortable going with that and saying I'm a no on him. So I'm going to be a yes on David Ortiz.
See, I feel the same way you do. When it's something that's leaked, there's prominent names on it, and you and I don't know what they were testing for.
Correct. And then he went the whole rest of his career and never got nailed for anything. So
right.
As far as I'm concerned, to me, that pretty much didn't happen.
Right. Okay, I find that's interesting. You and I, obviously, although it's closer for me, did not grow up in the Babe Ruth era. but it's closer for me, Matt, okay? when you see what Ohtani is doing, where I go out and I pitch 7-8 strong innings one day and then I'm clubbing one out the next, what are we seeing here that, you know, that is so different and so impressive?
Just a special generational-type talent to be able to do that at the same time. And keep in mind, when Babe Ruth played, not only was the game segregated, but there was less weight training, there was less specialization in terms of pitching. Basically, while the game was never easy, it was much easier then. And he still didn't even do it at the same time. He only hit on daisy pitch when he was in the Red Sox rotation. Once he went to the Yankees and became a position player, he stopped pitching. Ohtani's doing it at once. I mean, he's DHing three times a week, he's pitching one time a week. And, well, I don't think he's going to be good enough on, let's say, Silver Slugger territory because he's only playing three times a week. Pitching-wise, he's probably going to make like 25 to 30 starts. So he couldn't get big run at Cy Young. But let's say he makes 25 starts and he pitches to a 3.0 ERA. And he, hitting-wise, he hits .320 with a .400 on base percentage and hits 20 home runs. That's an MVP caliber player right there when you put that both together. So it's just... words can't do justice to how impressive it is to me what he's been doing so far.
Through the first 40 games, it's the same impression, that general impression that people have had over the last season or two, that there are normally three outcomes: home run, walk, strikeout.
Yeah.
Is that too gross a generalization as somebody who observes it very closely? And if it isn't too gross a generalization, what changes would you consider?
I think it's getting to the point where it's too much of those three. It falls in play at an all-time low. If you take away strikeouts, walks, and home runs, it's at an all-time low this season historically. And that's not good. You need traffic. Now, I do think home runs are action plays, so maybe
yes.
We shouldn't focus so much on that. But with so many walks and strikeouts, it's getting to the point, people that go to the game, you want to see action. And as Crash Davis taught us in Bull Durham, strikeouts are fascists. So I don't know what the answer is. I mean, people have talked about making four strikes for a strikeout, and I just hate the idea of that because that's just that changes everything that we've always known throughout our lives. Maybe they need to heighten the mound or lower the mound some. I mean, remember after the Bob Gibson 1.12 ERA year where – they lowered the mound. Maybe they need to lower it again to get more balls in play. I mean, that's not going to do anything to the walks, but guys might start putting the ball in play more. Generally speaking, I'd like to see guys get more aggressive. I know they'd like to get into the bullpens early and get the starter out of there, but as good as bullpens are nowadays, maybe that's not the best approach anymore. The Red Sox, for one team this year, have said that one of their changes in approach has been to be more aggressive. The first strike you get, swing, hit it, put it in play. I'd like to see guys get more aggressive instead of just standing up there and taking it and trying to work the counts. If you get a strike on the first pitch, hit it.
Yeah, well, Carl Yastrzemski was the American League batting champion in 1968. It was easy to figure out that he was because he was the only player in the American League to hit over 300. So yeah,
amazing.
They lowered the mound after that. So, all right. Now, the next part is, obviously, the Supreme Court made its ruling yesterday. It was on states' rights. I mean, they didn't legalize gambling where suddenly everybody can go out and place a bet today. Major League Baseball has been going around with the NBA lobbying legislatures. How important would it be for them to, quote, get a slice of this, even if it's that, like, mythical 1%?
I think that's what it's all about because, I mean, Major League Baseball can talk about integrity of the game all they want, but the players and managers are still going to be forbidden from gambling on the games. A fan gambling on baseball has nothing at all to do with the integrity of the game. So it's all about the dollar signs, and Major League Baseball is raking money in, but, you know, I wouldn't begrudge them from trying to get every avenue they can. So that's what it's all about. They're going to try to get a piece of the pie, and ultimately they probably will.
Next one is this. The Phillies are off to a very good start, and we know with Gabe Kapler the importance of analytics, and that's what he sold the Phillies on when he went in for his job interview. It's interesting to watch how this plays out. What have you thought of the Phillies so far?
Well, I mean, remember that he had a rough first week.
Yes, he did.
I think he did. He's learning on the fly that you need to – while analytics are good and forward thinking is good, this is not a video game, and you still have individuals in the locker room. There was no reason to not play Odubel Herrera on opening day. That was stupid. Not having Get Ready come in, that was stupid. But it seems like he's had enough self-awareness to kind of react and adapt, and that's good. And overall, I like this mix. You know, you got Nola and Arrieta at the top of the rotation. The offense has some young and exciting guys, and I feel like Hoskins is going to start to hit for more power again. So there's areas where they can even get better. I mean, the bullpen, there's been some speed bumps there, but I think he'll get that figured out. I think they're going to be a wild card contender all season. I would be surprised if they kind of fell off a cliff here. I think they're good. I think they have staying power.
I agree with you. I think they do, too. Now let's go to the other end of the state, the Pirates. Now, it doesn't hurt to be in that division, but what have you thought about them so far?
Very good start. I don't think it's sustainable. I think they have a lot of guys who are playing over their heads right now. I love Corey Dickerson, but I don't see him keeping this up. Moran, I don't see him keeping this up. Cervelli's out of his mind right now. I think... unlike the Phillies, I don't think they have staying power. It's going to be a tough top three there. I ultimately think the Brewers are the third best team, but they're good. I think the Cubs are going to win the division, but I think the Cardinals are very good as well. So I think the Pirates kind of settle into fourth. Maybe they play around 500 for a little bit, but ultimately they probably, you know, high 70s in wins. I do think everybody was way too down on them when they traded Cole and McCutchen. Only 1 year left of McCutchen. Cole, there just wasn't right with the mix with Garrett Cole in Pittsburgh, and we see how he's taken off in Houston. So I think we probably overreacted a lot, and I said we because I was in on that too. I think we probably overreacted to those moves, but overall I still don't think that they're going to be a playoff contender come September.
You and I have seen, you mentioned the Yankees and the Red Sox in your initial answer, Matt, and for the most part, when you look at their lineups, they're homegrown lineups, but they made key additions to it. The Yankees were able to trade for Giancarlo Stanton to go with their homegrown players. The Red Sox were able to sign J.D. Martinez to go with their homegrown lineup. The Pirates say they're under a budget, yet you and I both know every team received a $50 million windfall this year.
Yep.
Does it bother other owners that they don't see people investing in players like the Pirates just hold on to the money and don't do anything with it?
I'd be surprised if that bothered some of the large market owners, because they can still get all the players they want.
Right. Sure.
I mean, maybe there might be a little bit of, hey, why am I kicking you money in revenue sharing if you're just going to pocket it? Maybe there might be some of that, but I don't think that they would ever say anything publicly, because they need their solidarity right now. The players are going to be ready to fight come next CBA after the way free agency went this past year. And you've already got Major League Baseball cracking down on stupid crap like not letting Wilson Contreras wear his Venezuelan flag sleeve on his arm anymore. Right. So it's going to get contentious. So I think there might be internal grumbling, but they're not going to say anything publicly because they're going to need to stand together.
And how contentious do you think the next CBA will be?
I'm worried that we're going to have a season impacted in a big way. I don't know what the answers are. It used to work. Like, if you look at Albert Pujols, for example, by the end of his career, he will have made as much money as he's probably worth. It was just unbalanced. Like, he was drastically underpaid for the Cardinals. Now he's grossly overpaid. But it all worked out. It finally got to the point that the owners were saying, well, wait a minute. Why are we overpaying for their decline years? And they stopped doing it. Okay, well, now you have issues, because Carlos Correa didn't even make $1 million last year. Chris Bryant made $1 million exactly in his MVP year. But the line of thinking was, the players, just be patient. Once you hit free agency, you're going to get yours, and you'll be overpaid for the second half of your career. Well, if they get rid of that, now we have a big problem. And the players are drastically underpaid for 6 years, and then they're not getting overpaid for the free agency years. And Major League Baseball is swimming in record revenues right now, over $10 billion in profit last year. So it's going to get ugly. The players are going to dig their heels in. The owners are going to dig their heels in. And again, I am legitimately worried.
And if they get the integrity fees in states, it's going to be much more than $10 billion when it's all said and done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know,
Matt,
what?
An absolute pleasure.
I'm a players
really
guy. I'm a players guy. I want the players to. They're the ones earning it. It's not like any other business. I know people always want to compare it, like, oh, well, teachers, docs. No. This is special. These guys are specially talented. They're the talent. They need to be compensated as such. But anyway, sorry to go off on a tangent.
Oh no. But it's entertainment. So if you and I pay,
yes.
If they're going to give, let's give an example, Tom Cruise. $20 million to do the next Mission Impossible, which comes out this summer. The reason is they think he's a draw to get people into the theater to watch.
Correct.
And they'll make their money back. Well, that's why, for example, you trade for Giancarlo Stanton, absorb that contract, because it's going to fill Yankee Stadium and win.
And why doesn't anybody ever complain about musicians or actors and how much they make? It always has to be athletes. And then when it's just, oh, that's too much. Why? Well, that's just too much. Why? People are paying to watch them.
Right, they're paying to watch, but you know, here's the difference, though. The difference is you and I, based on let's keep the Tom Cruise thing going here with Mission Impossible, since the movie's coming out this summer. Okay, you and I don't know what bad days he had on the shoots. We see all the good stuff because it's cut together. With sports,
that's true.
See slumps.
Yep, that's true. That's a great point. So when Stanton goes 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, then that's a problem because he's getting paid too much to do that. Yep.
Right. Yeah, then he hits 2 home runs against the Red Sox, and they can't pay him enough.
Well, then it's just, well, no, that's, he should be doing that.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. It's about time. That's exactly what he should be doing.
Yep.
For the amount of money he's getting.
He should be doing that.
Right? Plus, it's publicized as to how much they get. We know what the salary of every player is. It's published.
Yeah, and in a way, you kind of wish that it wasn't, because then there wouldn't be so much consternation about it. The owners can afford it. I mean, everybody, trust us, the owners can definitely afford to pay these salaries. Otherwise, they would not have offered them.
Let me put it, yes, I've always said that. You know, when somebody complained to me once about Ryan Howard's salary on this show, I said, look, he did not put them in a room, hold them hostage, and release them one at a time.
Correct.
Until he got the number. They
Correct.
Gave him the number. And believe me, if you're an owner of a major league sports team, you have not taken a vow of poverty.
Correct. Even the poorest owner in Major League Baseball can afford to shell out hundreds of millions.
Absolutely. Matt, thanks so much. Really appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. That is Matt Snyder, Major League Baseball writer for CBSSports.com. We'll come back, wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, some show today. I hope you enjoyed it. We talked about sports book across the country. Dustin Gawker joined us in 3:35 today to talk about that. If you missed it, check it out on the Steve Jones Show podcast. Stan Saverin, last half hour. This half hour, Matt Snyder, Major League Baseball writer for CBSSports.com. Coming up on Thursday, we will have on the show Steve Bortstein will join us from Pimlico to talk about the Preakness. Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for ActionNetwork.com. Also, Jordan Rodriguez will join us from Charlotte on the sale of the Panthers to David Tepper, one of the minority owners of the Steelers. Jordan's expected to be with us on Thursday as well. And then on Friday, Dick Girardi will join us to give us his perspective on the Preakness as Justified tries to make it two in a row. So that's what we have. The Phillies are in this time slot tomorrow. The Phillies have been playing well, and we are proud to be your exclusive home in the Valley for the Philadelphia Phillies. And they're playing well. They're living up to it. They're holding up their end of the bargain. I like that team. All right. Our thanks to Stan, to Matt, and to Dustin for joining us on the show today. Off tomorrow, Steve Bortstein joining us from Pimlico on the Preakness Thursday, Jason Sobel. There'll be a little Tiger Woods talk coming up on Thursday with him. Jason, for years, was with ESPN. He's now with ActionNetwork.com. Sean, great job as always on your end, my friend.
Thank you, kind sir. Talk to you Thursday.
All right, back Thursday. Phillies here tomorrow. Suit here every day.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.